Welcome to Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and in each episode, my special guest and I will talk about local events, the topic of access in Cleveland, and sometimes we'll just talk about some cool people who are doing cool things in the greater Cleveland area. I'll introduce you to this week's guest right after this. This episode is brought to you by Daybreak Yoga, where every body can do yoga. Featuring all-level yoga classes, as well as self-care Sundays, retreats, and slowdown Sundays. Learn more at www.daybreak.yoga. Hey everybody, I am here today with Bella Sin from Cleveland Burlesque, and I am super excited to sit down and talk to her. Say hello, Bella.
Hello.
And I just really wanted you to sit down with us because I know a lot of people have questions and have been apprehensive, and some people just don't even know what burlesque is. So I'm excited that you're here because one of the things I say is I get to talk to cool people. And so today's episode is talking to a cool person here in Cleveland. So just tell us about you, Bella, in general.
My name is Bella Sin. I was born and raised in Juarez, Chihuahua, Mexico. I immigrated to this country in the early 2000s. And I created my company, which is now known as Cleveland Burlesque, formerly known as La Femme Burlesque, in 2004. I'm a plus-size woman of color that loves performing, costume making, teaching, and, oh my God, so much. I do way too much. And I'm also an activist and the crowned Cleveland Burlesque Queen.
So before we get too much into what you do, define burlesque, because I know I've had that question asked, and I'm like, well, it's kind of like, what is burlesque?
So burlesque is the art of the tease, the bump and grind, the leaving the rest to imagination. It has a very long history up to the Greek or Roman times, according to some people, and it developed in Europe, and it came into the United States, and it became very much, in its way, Americanized burlesque became what we know burlesque to be today. So essentially you're coming to a show, you're seeing a variety show with drag, burlesque, vaudeville variety, singers, songwriters, poetry, slam poetry. So you come in and you essentially see magic created on stage. You see it's a whole stage show that is in a very high-end production, but in a affordable location and place. And it's also a interactive experience that is a space where body positivity, women-centric at times, and it's, I just like to say it's magic.
I would agree. I've been to plenty of shows. I've never forgotten my experience at your show.
That's what I want.
So could you do some terminology for us? Because the first time I spoke to you ever, you were like, oh, it's going to be a great show. There's burlesque, there's boylesque, there's drag queens, there's drag kings, and I'm like, know what half these things are, but that sounds cool. Define some of the terms, because I think we all know what drag queens are or drag, but how does that differ from all the other things that make up burlesque?
So burlesque and drag actually has been together through history since the days of before the days of Jewel Box Revue, because we were a lowbrow style of entertainment. It wasn't exactly in the norm to have this kind of entertainment be in the everyday. So, and it's also, it was a lot of marginalized people that were in that side of entertainment because it was the only place we could find jobs. So we have the houses of burlesque, which is a matriarchal woman-centric association, and it's the catch-all. So then we have boylesque, which is the male derivative of it, but it's also, at times, like, both of them are so gender specific at times that we try to go ahead and be, just say the burlesque is essentially the casual. Boylesque didn't start till the mid-90s or in the 80s to catch on. And then we have drag kings, drag queens, which is female and male illusion. Then we have singers, songwriters, and those are very self-explanatory, fan dancers, belly dancers, which we hire a different level of belly dance, and we hire a different idea of belly dance. We allow those spaces to catch the people that are reclaiming their culture in their history. So I love belly dancers, but there's something about belly dance that you have to be careful with and specific, and I think we all know what I'm talking about. And that's not, you know, that's not my lane, so I stick to mine. But then we have comedians, we have storytellers, we have aerialists, and those are people that hang by things on things in things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, like, they just go really fast in circles. It's an art form. We have so many terminologies within the business, but I think entertainment, yes, is a catch-all, and it's like a diverse catch-all. But I think when you're coming to a burlesque show, we don't want you to think about the definitions. We just want you to have fun.
Talk to me about the audiences that come to your show. Because I was, it wasn't what I expected. Just not knowing, you know.
Yeah.
And so I was really, it's in a positive way, happy to see what I saw. So just tell us kind of about who comes to the burlesque shows.
As far as our audience, it's mostly women 25 to 35 and 35 to 45. And that demographic comes because they're looking for something to watch that's actually entertainment and uplifting. And then the men that do come, they enjoy it and they don't have complaints about it, because some people are not always comfortable with queer spaces or POC-centric spaces. So when we serve you the show the way we do, a lot of people are just like, oh my God, they forget what they saw in a way, and they feel just comfortable watching it. So the people that come to our shows are mostly LGBTQIA. So because we've been in those spaces and we have those fans, and it's mostly there, I'm always pleasantly surprised that our demographic changes on a yearly basis. But we always see the pack house, the Beachland, can hold about 250-300 people for us. And sometimes there has been shows that there was five people. I remember those days, five people, and we were performing. There was more cast than audience. But our demographic is so diverse, and my customership is so diverse, and that makes me so happy, because I'm trying to put a diverse show out there, and we're the most diverse show in Ohio for people to come and see. And I think that's why we have so many audiences from so many walks of life, especially specifically POC.
Nice. So how long have you been doing the burlesque shows, or Ohio burlesque? Or
so I have been performing for 16 years this March. The company has been alive for 15 years. And then the Ohio Burlesque Festival is going on its 9th year.
Okay. So what's the Ohio Burlesque Festival, the difference between that festival and your show?
Oh my God. It's the Ohio Burlesque Festival became a space that I wanted to start a festival, because I started seeing all these festivals going around, and it was just so difficult to get into them. They were not diverse. There was not spaces where I was welcomed or even invited to. So I wanted to start a festival that wasn't going to focus on that, and wanted to focus on a true space to build for other people. So I'm always building stages. That's my talent. I'm always building stages for people to go up on, and for me as well. But I created the festival as a one-night-only thing, and it blew up. It sold out. And I was just like, whoa. And that was my first hardest lesson to learn about business. It was like, well, one of them. So then it really took Detroit, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland to put together that festival. Then as time went on, I started realizing what spaces we were curating. And then I started just like being more imaginative and paying more attention to what was needed. And before I knew it, we've added another night, and then we added another night. So now it's a 3-day international burlesque extravaganza. We've had people as far as Ireland, Peru, South America. Like, we've had people from London, Italy. We had also all over the country, Canada. Canada is a foreign country, but they're kind of like our neighbors right now. They're like, hey. So it became a cluster of 60 to 70 entertainers that come to showcase in Cleveland.
And these people apply to come. You're not seeking mm-hmm. them out and inviting them. They want to be here. Is that
yeah,
correct?
They want to be here. We're specifically known for also building launch pads for performers that wouldn't regularly be seen as headliners, but we nurture those spaces for them to kind of jump to the next step over. So we're known to hiring from our own that have taken a chance on us. We see it fair to take a chance on them and Absolutely. Put them in that space and put that on them. But they want to come here because they want to showcase here. Ohio Burlesque has become the festival that everybody wants to come to, especially because they know that space is a welcoming space to all, not just some.
I think, yeah, I have so many questions for you. Like, I'm trying to figure out which way to go here. There's just, like, so many roads. You know, just from the audience perspective, because the first show I visited with you was my first experience, and I didn't know what to expect. And so, you know, I lean into that. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of what I do here at Black Girl and CLE, is try to find a space. Like, I've never tried that. Explore. Let's go explore this thing in this space. And then report back so that others will want to come.
Yep.
What are some, I guess, mental things or things people need to be prepared for when they come? Like, I came in not knowing, and I'm okay with that uncomfort level. But a lot of people are like, what is this going to be? What is this? What is that? Do I have to have this? Should I be? You know, what are those kind of tips that you would have for someone who's a first-time burlesque show attendee?
So the first thing you have to do is actually research into the shows you're going to. That's key and important. You can check out the websites, you can check out the reviews, the review section on our Facebook pages. The feedback that we have is crucial to how we run our shows. So that's the first thing. Investigate what you're seeing, and the level of first burlesque experience can be soured by a bad burlesque performance. And a lot of people, we see a lot of burlesque, and there is, it takes all kinds to make the world. But for your first show, you should find a show that's high profile, that is serving you something that you are looking for, and a different package. So in our package, we like to have the costumes, we would like to have the performers, we like to have the entertainment, we like to have the diversity, we like to have everything packaged in an affordable night out. It's important to look. It was like, oh hey, is the free parking, do they have a kitchen open, do you have drinks, is there anything I can eat there, is it wheelchair accessible, so you know, like, can we, do we have reserve or VIP ticketing, do they have plenty of chairs, like those things are very important, and those are the things that I pay attention whenever I go somewhere, because I also am wearing heels or a gown, so I like being extra. So then the expectations, you shouldn't have any. You should expect to have fun, be open to what you're seeing on stage, because it's going to be completely different than what I'm going to tell you. I want to fill your imagination with the idea of that giddiness of seeing something new and being excited. There is the uncomfort level with it, I think, is coming from our own programming on not accepting plus sizes as beautiful, different bodies as beautiful, different genders as beautiful, different races is beautiful. There's so many things that occupy our stage that I want people to just be open to everything and take it in and enjoy it. This is one of the platforms that you're going to see drag queens in a different light. You're going to see burlesque in a different light. You're going to have boylesque in a different light. You're going to have a lot of things that are going to come at you, but it's not going to be uncomfortable. You're going to be like, oh my God, there's a dude stripping on stage. No, that's an artist doing a piece of art, because if you go see contemporary art, you're gonna see the same thing but in nude underwear, which is weird. So, but right, that's what they do, and it's, you know, it's evoking and beautiful. But we're looking to, we're funny, we're serious, we're sexy, we're scary. There's a little bit of everything. And if your first show is the festival, trust you and believe me when I say you're gonna get addicted. So I like also putting out there that shows in different spaces perform differently. Our show in the Nine is going to be different than our show at the Beachland.
How so?
I think it's the demographic that comes into both spaces, but I also think it's the Nine is more intimate. We have more access to you. We actually can physically step off stage. Unlike Kimmy Katarja that just jumps off stage onto the splits, that's a thing. The Beachland from a 2.5-foot stage. yeah. The character was She-3PO. That's what she came up with as the Star Wars Burlesque show. Yay, insurance. But in the Nine, we have like a 70, 75-seater stage. Like, and they're all really comfy chairs, and you have drink service, and, you know, class it up and dress it up. Great picture opportunities. But, like, it's just closer. you feel things so much closer. And some people are actually afraid to clap or cheer and holler and hoot, and that's part of burlesque, is interactive in that manner. But I think it's because it's so up close and personal versus Beachland, that is such a big stage we can project off of it.
Right.
So, and it's one of those spaces in Cleveland that you truly feel like you're seeing something Cleveland for Cleveland by Cleveland via Mexico to to you. So I just think that both spaces served a very different show.
So, how did you get started with burlesque? You said you've been doing it, what, 16 years?
Yeah.
What made you start that first time or say, I think I want to try this? Or how did burlesque find you? How about that question?
I was fresh into the United States. And it was the first time I skipped school, or skipped class, I should say. In my inner city school, and it, being in the inner city school, our library wasn't so beefed up, so whatever came in, it was what was in. So, like every horrible teenage kid, I skipped class to go to the library.
Yeah.
That was horrible. Wow. Yep. Living the dangerously. Yeah. So, I was looking through the theater section in the books, because it was a little bit of a struggle still to read in English. So it was like, you know, whatever. And I came across this book called The Pictorial History of Burlesque. And that was it. At 16 years old, I decided what I was going to do with the rest of my life. That was it. I was going to become a burlesque performer. And I did the worst thing ever. And I think the library knew that I swiped the book from the library.
Do you still have it?
Yeah. Actually, no, I don't, because I moved and I got lost in translation. And there's a lot of things that connect with this, because when I moved to Ohio in 2004, after I had my daughter, I just, you know, I started taking classes when I was 17. I debuted when I was 18 at a goth bar, which was just awkward. No, I was still 17. Yeah. So, totally underage.
Those were the days.
Nobody's checking IDs. Thank God for makeup. But I remember that the goth drag queen was putting on my pieces with nail glue. Okay. Learned a lesson there. but I came to Ohio in 2004. I just set up in a march, and I was like, let's do it. And we did our first show and everything. But, like, ironically, through the years, it was a struggle to get it started. Like, I can't tell you how many times we got kicked out of places or made change in the back by the dumpsters in our cars. That was the thing. So we were treated it's a whole nother story, but like that book that came in the way of a gift from Cindy from the Beachland a year or so after we started performing there.
Oh wow.
And so it's sitting on my shelf in my house right now.
Nice.
So the book that got everything started eventually, I want to think that it's the same book, because I'm a silly universal romantic. Yeah. But it was
found its way back to you.
Yeah. And then I come to find out that I had two great aunts that did burlesque.
Oh wow.
Back in the day, they would go from Mexico in to El Paso, and then they will take this train that will take them to the Great Plains, and then it would take them all over the world, or well, the United States, and they would perform this Adelita act in horses. So, and then they would do the Hoochie Coochie shows. And when my grandma was like, oh yeah, that was a thing, and I was like, would you have liked to inform me that I skipped a couple of red generations and ended on me? Because I was asking questions.
Right.
So it's nice that I connected my history in it. And I'm still connecting my history to it, especially Latin performers. But, like, that's how burlesque found me. And it was just, like, to me, for some reason, it dawns on me not that long ago. I was like, wait a minute. I picked everything that I wanted to do for the rest of my life when I was 16. So that's a little ballsy.
I don't know if you picked it or it chose you. It was... I think it's your family lineage, and you just had the genes.
It just showed up.
I just believe in that kind of universal pull, calling, whatever you want to call it. So, switching gears a little bit, when I first talked to you, and you were telling me, we were talking about the Carmel Review.
Yes.
Which
coming back.
Oh, I love that. So that was my first burlesque show, so that show has a special place in my heart. And I was so, like, I was sold.
I cried so much in that show. It's beautiful.
And I was amazed at everything I saw. I was even the people in the audience and how it was like girlfriends night. So like the girls would grab their friends, like, come on, let's go do this thing. There were so many cultures there. So, you know, straight, gay, anywhere on that spectrum and anything in between. It was just beautiful. Plus the positive body positivity. So I went in like not knowing. I hadn't talked to you. So I didn't really understand the empowerment thing, the piece of it, because I hadn't seen it before, which a lot of the events I talk about here on the podcast are like, I just went because someone said, let's go. I showed up. And then, of course, I'm pleasantly surprised. So, the Carmel Review, let's talk about the people of color, or why you choose to showcase, I would say, women of color, because, you know, burlesque can be anyone, but it seems like, it feels like you do a lot to push women of color and showcase all body types, you know, all women, and make that your space.
Well, the Caramel Review actually came from a conversation with Cece Noir and Mr. Tuesday, and I stepped back to make that show function, but the three producers were them. Okay. I wanted to occupy a space with black-only entertainment and all shades of black in it. And they really were the ones that took it over. Cece was really the one that pushed it through the top. We also have been dying to work with Sugar Shack Girls. And they're a local cabaret, all-black cabaret, and I freaking adore them. And so we wanted to do something to push forward more black spaces in burlesque, because actually burlesque is not very POC friendly. Very, like, it's not body friendly. Is there's these things that I always talk about with people. I was like, being a woman of color, even if white passing, will always stop you from jumping walls. You have to jump 30 walls in the like to get into one, and open so many doors to get them shut in your face, and especially for black performers, because they have more visibility issues. Either they want you to do the Josephine Baker gig and you're like, why can't I, you know, do this something else? Why do I always have to play up the typecasting? Like, and this is the same thing with Latina performers, is like, why do it, or Asian diaspora performers? Like, there's so much in burlesque that, like, I was also tired of the just the seeing other of my peers do white only shows quite legitimately. And even that I paid attention, so I was like, hey, stop having black women kitten for you, as in stage pickup artists, they pick up our clothes. But I was like, that doesn't look good, and that's not good. Oh, you're just getting all right, and then, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, no, you pay attention. So, because that's reinforcing the mammy situation, right, or the maid situation, which is another story. But it's we wanted to create a space, and we have been creating spaces for such a long time for just people to represent themselves. Because I always want to see, I want a woman in the audience, or a man, or gender nonconformist perform, like, person, to see something on stage that inspires them to just accept their body. As soon as you see somebody, like a black woman that's plus size up there, you're like, black is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Or like, brown is beautiful. Or gender not conformist is beautiful. I'm beautiful. I'm okay. That's what we want to inspire. And we wanted to put that out there. And Caramel Review was the most beautiful show that the company produced that year. Because from start to finish, like, I cried 6 times. Even the curtain call was different. And, you know, like, there's one picture with me in the whole cast. And, like, I only posted privately and to my friends and stuff. But, like, having that alone in our Facebooks, in our socials, it showed people, hey, this is happening. This is, you need to embrace it. And I think as a Mexican woman, I've never forgotten where I'm from, who I am, and regardless of the color of my skin, I always am put, I put myself in that place. Right. That I was like, you know, I'm here to uplift those that we love. So our show is POC-centric, and it's POC first cast. Then we fill in with our white performers, and we pay attention to everything from size gender orientation and, you know, skin color, hair. Like, we just want diversity to a point on stage that you just feel like there was everybody there. And that makes, that's what truly makes a production happen.
So I'm going to put this question out here. It could be simple. Because you are POC first casting, do you get any pushback?
They learn not to.
Okay, but have you? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, moving forward, because that's a whole nother conversation, and I get the same kind of thing with Black Girl. Why does it have to be? Don't you think? But that's another conversation for another show. So I'll tell you two stories about that show that we just talked about. Number one, Sugar Shack Girls.
Oh, I love them.
So at some point, I think I walked over to the bar area, and it might have been, maybe it was an intermission or whatever. I was over there, and all of a sudden, I hear one of the performers in the group go, "Miss Black?" And so no one ever called me Miss Black unless you were my student.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, uh-oh, Miss Black. I turn around, and sure enough, it was one of my students, my former students. And I'm like, what are you? And I, you know, out of just whatever thought process I had, I'm like, what are you doing here? And she was like, I'm part of Sugar Shack. And I'm just like, and so, you're, you know, welcome. I'm like, you're on stage. I'm watching a former student. I'm watching a former student, like, you know, be sensual. And I'm like, something's wrong. Like, how did I get here? But it was a great show. So every time I see Sugar Shack is performing, I'm like, oh, so-and-so. And she's not even, like, the core member, but I'm like, she's part of that group.
You're right. Welcome.
The other thing I liked about the show, when we talked about the plus size and all body types, is that I, you know, I'm not the smallest person, and I go through my whole, like, oh, I can't find clothes that fit me. Right. So what happens is,
it's not easy to dress divinities.
So as I'm watching the dancers, I'm like, where'd she get those shoes from?
Amazon.
And they're shaped like me, but I can't, you know. And so it actually encouraged me to want to, you know, like, oh, yeah, like she looks good in that, you know, being a larger woman or what have you, which means, you know how we do that, then I would look good in that. And so now I'm like, where do they shop? Like, I know they make some of their costumes, but, like, I need that outfit, too. I need those shoes. I need those heels. And look at what they're doing. So it was encouraging because we so often get bamboozled with all
covering
the things.
Up.
Right. All the things and all the things that society says, this is the look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you must weigh a certain thing. You must be vegan. You must be this. You must be all those things. So that was just another takeaway from the show.
I think societal expectations have been so, they have been so dense since day one. Like, being a woman alone is absolutely a nightmare. But I think the best thing that I was ever taught is a well-dressed woman at any size is her confidence that dresses her, not the clothing that has on her garment. That does not make her. She makes the clothing, or they make the clothing. So that's something that was taught to me by Maria Felix, which is a really huge, who was really a huge actress in Mexico and big, big feminist. But, like, freaking love her. But it's just, like, my mom always, like, she was always curvy. And, like, I mean curvy as in full figured. And, like, she would wear these dresses after she divorced my father. Even before then, there was this story that they all were wearing skirts. And there's this really steep hill in Mexico. Nothing over there is paved at that time. And they were going up with, like, you know, up the hill with their heels and stuff. They get up there and they take off their long dresses to mini skirts. My uncle was up there waiting for them with my grandpa. And my grandpa turned them around and be like, nah, you all put regular clothes on, you know, but for the sake of modesty. But we were never told not to wear it. And they were... I was really lucky that I grew up in families like, you know, if you're going to wear that, wear it. And they would always teach the boys not to say anything of it. But it's like, my mom always said, it's like, when you're wearing something, wear it because it makes you happy. She would wear these things. She was a pharmacist in Mexico. So she would wear these, like, pencil skirts with these sheer see-through tops. That's lace see-through tops with the matching bra under it with a business code over it. And I was like, wow. Ain't that a lot? Right? But I was like, So I was like, whoa, mom. But she would like wear these heels, her hair, the lipstick, the black eyeliner, the brows. Like, that's what I am now. But it's just, we were never like, I have this velvet dress she wore in the 80s. And she wore it in the 90s. Tight, skin tight. And she wore it. She gave no interest to anybody who had anything to say about it.
That's nice.
And I think that's where my body positivity came from because I never questioned what I would wear. And yeah, like, sizeism is a thing, and you always have the tia out there. It was like, oh, if you lose weight, you look really cute. And you can lose 15 pounds if you like take this Herbalife remedy. And I was like, that's a pyramid scheme, right? But it was the whole thing. But it's just like, we never really, it was never really a question of, are you wearing it? It's just like, if you want to wear that clothes, pay for it yourself. So I got a job. So
And
I
then be
started.
happy in it.
Yeah. So the whole point is that we're trying to tear down stereotypes. And one of our, like, I've been told that our shows is one of the places that people actually wear stuff just to look cute. Then trans women feel safe, where black men and black women feel welcome. And, and people that need accessibility feel safe. Like, our space has turned, which I think it's beautiful, and I don't think it's recreatable in many places. We come in and we take over, and they know that I'm a no nonsense person, and it's been very public about that. But I love seeing how our public gets inspired in how they, like, for 2 days they go and like, I'm gonna wear heels and I'm gonna put my makeup on because I want to, because you should be doing it for yourself. And this is the makeup from yesterday. If you could see me now. But I think it's just, I love that show exists because I feel that I'm inspiring a lot of other people by producing that, to not only produce their own spaces, but to take over those spaces and inspire those people that we need to inspire.
So I got two more questions, and then we might play the lightning round. So the
Okay.
first question is, I've seen you offer scholarships. Tell me what's that about, or who is that for?
So I'm offering scholarships again in a couple weeks for the Cleveland Burlesque Academy Intensive. Performers,
What is that?
That's our burlesque school. We're running out of Expressions Fitness, which also offers pole and all like their like stretchy classes are amazing. Tiffany Expressions is like, that's one of those places that I really felt truly welcomed. I mean, like, she sends me a Valentine's Day card.
Oh, nice.
Not only as a staff member, but as a person that's taking classes there too. I can tell you that anybody coming into that space is going to be uplifted and put forward. Tiffany's just that kind of person, and I love her for that. I think that's one of those studios that we need more of in Cleveland. So it's over in Berea, expressionsfitness.com.
Nice. Little
.com.
plug there.
But, so talking to people, I found that accessibility and price was a problem when it came to women of color having accessibility to burlesque. So we give out these scholarships, and we give out this very basic application that we got. Actually, we made a little more wordy to women of color that are interested in starting their time in burlesque. The classes, as they are, I keep them at $300 because for an 18-week course, they're not expensive. They we even do payments, but we like to do the scholarships to encourage women of color to come in, see what it is, because burlesque, if regardless if you treat it as a hobby or if your careers is an expensive hobby. But if you get like ingenious with it or like savvy with it, you can really make anything into a clothing, like in a garment that you can wear on stage. So we're gonna do a show of all recyclables. Our clothing is gonna be out of all recyclables, and we have to strip out of them flawlessly. I have really weird thoughts, so I wanted this scholarship to go to people that really would need it and would appreciate it. So the debut shows, which have their own, you have to have certain expectations to fulfill to be in those shows. And like, because I don't want to compromise my production value just because somebody wants to be lazy and not do the work. Because this is, when people think about burlesque, they don't think of a viable industry. This is a viable industry to be in. And if you play your cards right, you can go pretty far into it, but you have to treat everything as a business. And a lot of people have been like, oh, you're my employee as my teacher and my employee. I was like, no. The years and years and years and years that you're learning from me, make no mistake, you will always be a student. The best thing in life that I was taught is, like, the best teacher is always a student. And I love learning, which is makes me happy. But I think the scholarships will give an opportunity for women, men, gender nonconformist individuals, to afford something that they want to get into and may not afford in the long run. And usually I post up there, be like, hey, listen, if you'd like to sponsor a student for Cleveland Burlesque Academy, this is where you can donate to. And that sponsors, like, things that I need to buy for class. But it also gives somebody the opportunity to come in and learn something. And burlesque classes are revolutionary because not only are we working with people with body dysmorphia, with anxiety, with depression, with a lot of traumas that we free of. So that's why I tell people, I was like, if you're going to want to start burlesque, go to actual official classes with a professional. Not just, like, we're not the only burlesque class in town, so there's other people that, you know, that do burlesque that teach. And always look at the teacher that's teaching you, because I'm sorry, like, if you, within a year, two, three in burlesque, you don't have those reins down, and you can't work with somebody in their traumas and their insecurities, and you don't have the tools to teach. You wouldn't expect me to go do surgery on somebody by just saying, my friend taught me a couple things, so I'm an expert in it, I can do it. Or my friend went to college, so he taught me, so I know how to do this. You wouldn't start with that.
I've seen it done a few times.
So. Exactly. So it's just stripping.
Right.
You first, I'm writing some sun again. I was like, burlesque has its own language. It has its own verbiage. It has its own history. We're losing that culture because we're not teaching that history to people, or people just don't care about our legends, or just don't care about our organizations. Burlesque disappeared once before, and the bubble just burst again, and we're seeing shows close left and right. We just lost a couple in Cleveland. And we need to be savvy into passing on the bucket and the, I'm just punching your microphones, and, and like when I get really really into it, when we're passing the bucket, we're passing the torch, we have to do it properly. So this is going, I plan to be here 15 years from now. Yeah. And I know when I say that you believe me, because it's true. Like even as a ghost, I'm gonna be Casper, the friendly stripping ghost.
Nice.
So, you know, but it's time to make this accessible for people, and also make it a viable learning experience where you can really take that and implement it in your daily life. A lot of people have had life changes after my workshops.
I'm sure.
Like, and I've seen it, a lot of people either get, you know, realize that in the relationship they're in, that's not the space they need, or the aspirations they have pushed them forward to something else. And there's people that just really didn't even finish the workshop because they were, their own demons took the best of them. Mm-hmm. So Cleveland Burlesque Academy is really a space that took me a lot to nurture and put on paper, and going to online and eventually owning a studio where we can teach these traits to other people. Because I hate going on YouTube and learning something, but that's the culture now.
Right.
So, God, like, I love books and the smell of them, but not a lot of people pick them up anymore.
Right.
So I want to teach people to not only empower themselves, like, I also have a weekly class that I teach out of Expressions, and that's Burlesque Roulette. It starts in March. And that's a weekly, you can just stop in and just flirt with the idea of burlesque and actually get some body positivity. We have a very immersive, the third week we do a forgiveness workshop.
Oh, nice.
And a lot of people don't know how to wash all these feelings that they have off of them, and I've had people literally cry in these workshops, and when they open their eyes, they're like, I don't know, I just feel heavier. Like, I felt heavy, I feel, yes, lighter. And those are the things that I want to inspire people, but those are the things that I had to go through seminars and search, mm-hmm, and talk and research.
They work through your stuff too.
Yeah, because like all of us, like I have mental illness and it's just difficult. I mean, we talked about this before, and I started being more open about it. Thank you to my therapist. Thank you, yes, therapist.
Therapist, awesome.
She's fantastic. But like, you know, working through it now more than ever is important, especially if we're building this little group of people that are going to uplift you, because the worst enemy of another woman is another woman.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes ourselves. First.
Call out.
But that's a therapy, that's a therapy podcast, y'all.
Yeah. But I'm hoping with CVA and with these scholarships that we get more people of color, more entertainers out there in the world of burlesque that occupy spaces, because I'm tired of hearing people say, it was like, well, we don't have any performers of color in this like, that we can book. I was like, you know what? I booked the Caramel Review, was all local.
Right.
And that didn't even include half of the fantastic entertainers that we have it. They're from drag to rock and roll. Like, I've met so many inspirational people of color in my travels. Like, Black Tones were, like, a Black woman in rock and roll is always going to be my favorite.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Black Tones.
So, wrapping up, how can we find you or next shows or how can we support?
So, you can find us at clevelandburlesque.com or ohioburlesque.com. Our social media's at Ohio Burlesque Festival, at Cleveland Burlesque. Twitter's at Ohio Burlesque, at Cleveland Burlesque. We just changed our name from La Femme Mystique to Cleveland Burlesque, so try to go ahead and maybe type both and you'll find us. we're still working through that. And our next couple of shows are going to be absolutely, positively ridiculous and important. So we're celebrating our 15th anniversary this year. This is the big 1-5, our quinceañera. That's like a sweet 16 in Mexico. But we're going to have a kickoff party at the 9, March 22nd. And that kickoff party is going to be featuring Miss Shimi LaRue from Chicago. She does this number, and she's amazing. She's an amazing performer of color that I freaking adore from Chicago. Then we're going to have the whole cast along with Samantha Echo, and she's hilarious. So then we moved. We're going to have a little cocktail hour, and then we're going to have an after party to kick it off. Then on the 29th of March, we go to the Beachland Ballroom, and the tease is our 15th anniversary show. We're bringing the reigning king and queen of burlesque, Inga from Seattle, with her award-winning number at Burlesque Hall of Fame, which is our museum, and then Icky Muffin from Austin, Texas, doing their winning performance there too, and both of them are so gifted and so talented. Then we have a bevy of performers from our past that we're bringing back. Nice. A couple of people gracing us from past memberships of La Femme, and our current roster of performers. We're going to have, for VIP and reserve, we're going to have a little cocktail party and VIP reception that's going to be fantastic. And then we're going to have the full show, and I have a couple of other surprises in store, especially for my performers that they don't know of, and for a lot of people in the cast and crew and audience. I can't stress how much this show is going to be so bananas. Like, for people that go to the festival, that show's festival level, and I don't think they're ready. So we have monthly shows, both at Beachland and at the 9 at the Alex Theater. And every month we have our shows on our website. Sign up to our email list. We only send one or two emails that are sometimes are misspelled because I'm Mexican and speak Spanish.
Well, mine are sometimes misspelled because I'm writing them at 4 in the morning. So.
Same! 2:30. But our social medias are always populated. So we'll let you know about some giveaways and stuff. Actually, Black Girl Silly is going to have some exclusive tickets to give away to us.
Yes.
And, you know, come and visit us for a show. Come and see us. We also post other fun shows to do. Delusional Divas of Drag at the Pigwick and Frolic is another one. We support a lot of our local drag shows in our local community. Black Mess is another one that we love to support, and anything Sugar Shack does, because I freaking love Lisa Love, and, you know, like, what she created there was so neat and so beautiful. I wish that they would have more spaces, and I'm trying to get them those spaces, because I just love them. So, Miss Flo Diva is going to join us for the 15th anniversary, 25th. God, we'll get there. For the 15th anniversary, she's going to join us there. So, and then we have a couple of surprises in store this year. Okay. We already started announcing our headliners for the Ohio Burlesque Festival, and I'm really excited to
announce. Which month is that?
That's August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, 2019 at the Beachland Ballroom. Three nights of burlesque debauchery and drag. And I'm really excited for one of our headliners specifically. It's coming from Canada. And nice. She's an Indigenous woman that does burlesque. She's one of the one of the only indigenous burlesque troupes in the world. And I am so excited for her to come here. And I think everybody's going to be on the floor after she's done with everybody. So it's going to be fantastic. If you're a performer and want to be part of it, we do have our applications out till March 31st. And you can apply at ohioburlesque.com.
Awesome. So I am going to save you the lightning round because I want to leave on that note. So I just want to thank you for joining us and telling your story.
Thank you for having me.
And telling everyone about burlesque. I can't wait to see your next show. I can't wait to see your anniversary.
It's going to be a big, big month.
I can't wait. I'm going to just say it over and over again. So thank you again for your time and for everyone else. I want to thank our sponsor, which is Dawn Rivers over at Daybreak Yoga, for sponsoring this episode where she believes everybody can do yoga. So there you go.
More I love yoga.
Body positivity. And if you like our show, sponsor us. And thanks, Bella.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. Please check us out online at www.blackgirlincle.com and like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Black Girl in CLE. Talk to you next time.